Okay, for our next speaker, we have Mike Powers, and he's the CSTL Technical Director for Leidos Accredited Testing and Evaluation Labs. He's responsible for conducting FIPS 140-2 and SCAP validations. He previously worked on penetration testing, reverse engineering, server administration, and C and Python-based product development. He's got a Bachelor of Science in Math and a minor in Computer Science from UMBC. Mike, please go. He's also one of the people who review all my products. Richard was the one who used to review all my products, so I'm in trouble.
All right, so I guess I'm here to talk about SP-156A because there's a big transition coming up at the end of the year for anyone that's not aware. We'll get into the details of that. The agenda is that I'm going to go over the motivations, then we're going to go over some brief history of 56A, and then we're going to kind of dive into these three industry standard protocols so you can see where Diffie-Hellman or where 56A would be used in those protocols, and then finally some discussion over self-tests. So as I stated, the motivation is that there's a transition in December 31st, 2017, basically. If you're one of the vendors that has a non-approved entry that reads one of these non-approved Diffie-Hellman or EC Diffie-Hellman, that those will no longer be usable in the FIPS mode of operation, and that basically post the transition date, your options are basically going to either be to obtain a CAS certificate to affirm or to show that you support 56A with one of the approved KDFs, or you will do a vendor affirmation of 56A revision 2, as they don't have CAVP testing for revision 2 yet. So some history, original version was 2006, first revision came in 2007. It was pretty minor revision. It was just basically allowing one exception where I guess keys are usually only allowed in one context, for example, key establishment or in digital signatures, but this one exception allowed the dual use of keys in the context of certificate requests. And I guess the motivation of, or in the early revisions of 56A, the hope from NIST was that that the 56A KDFs would be adopted by the major protocols like TLS, IPsec, and SSH, but ideally that didn't end up happening. So that's why you saw revision 2, which I guess the biggest change that I'm highlighting here is that they've added the option for application-specific KDFs, which is basically the TLS KDF, the SSH KDF, and that. So revision 2 is basically a step closer to being fully compliant with those industry standard protocols. So with revision 2, I noticed that there are still quite a few like gotchas for vendors that are trying to be compliant. Number one being that for Diffie-Hellman, many of the groups that are in common usage, like for Ike or like Safe Primes and Oakley groups, a lot of those are not allowed as per SP-856A Revision 2. But there is one RFC, which is RFC 5114, which does define a few groups that are specifically catered at being compliant to 56A Revision 2. And then there were a couple other gotchas with Revision 2 being that you're basically restricted, as far as what you can test, you're restricted to a 2048-bit modulus, and that doesn't seem quite consistent with the other standards like DSA and RSA, which allow larger sizes. And for EC Diffie-Hellman in particular, once the transition has occurred at the end of 2017, at least as it stands now, with revision 2, you would not be able to use non-NIST curves in EC Diffie-Hellman any longer, which would make it so you couldn't use curve 25519 and things like that. But as a big caveat is that actually during the lab managers meeting on Monday, NIST announced the intent that there's going to be a revision 3 of the 56A standard coming out hopefully by the end of this year. That would actually mitigate all three of the issues that I just went over there. So this shouldn't actually end up messing up too many implementations, I guess. I guess for the remainder of this talk, I guess here are just some acronyms that I might be using. I think you guys should be familiar with most of these. Maybe FFC is unfamiliar to you, which is just finite field cryptography, which is used in Diffie-Hellman and DSA. And MQV is that. I can't quite pronounce that, but it's basically similar to Diffie-Hellman. So as far as 56A goes, there's, I think, five schemes. It's basically, the key point here is they're defined in terms of how many ephemeral and static keys are used in the various schemes. So if you see 2E, 2S, that means there's two ephemeral keys and two static keys involved in the scheme, or 2E, 0S, there'd be just two ephemeral keys. In actually all three of these protocols that we're going over, there's only gonna be two keys involved. It'll either be two ephemeral keys, one ephemeral key and one static key, or two static keys. So I guess looking into TLS in particular, the schemes are defined, the cipher suites are defined, and if you have cipher suites with these prefixes, basically if it's TLSDH, that means that there's a static key that, like, the server in its certificate will actually have a static key for use in Diffie-Hellman. And then for DHE, that means for every session there's a ephemeral key pair generated. And similarly for ECDH and ECDHE, it's basically just a difference between static and ephemeral. And depending on also if the client has a client certificate for TLS, you can also have a static key in the client certificate. So it can be both ends are static, or one end is ephemeral, one end is static, kind of depending on the handshake. So I guess a quick way to kind of determine what schemes you could support would be to run just like an SSL scan. I just used as a test on some of my web servers, I use Qualys SSL SSL server scan, and you'll get output with the cipher suites. It should tell you, like, right off the bat, this gives you like reasonable confidence that you have a 56A compliant scheme, but there are kind of some caveats here, is that for the Diffie-Hellman in particular, you have to be, at least as a revision 2, you'd have to be using the 224-bit or 256-bit Q values as defined in the FIPS 186-4 and 56A standard, which is not standard, because if you generate primes, I believe, using like the OpenSSL tools, or I guess like the SSH generator, those generate safe primes, which are not compatible with revision 2 of the standard. But as I said before, revision 3 is supposedly going to be fixing that. That was the big caveat. And then also you need to, if you have the ECDHE or ECDH schemes, you need to make sure you support one of the NIST curves. I think actually NIST has released an IG that basically provides the mappings, but basically if the output has any of those 12 curves that I listed there, then you do support one of the NIST curves, and you're good to go on that aspect. And if you want to set custom Diffie-Hellman parameter values, you can use, I have two examples there for Apache and Nginx. I've tested that you can use the parameters defined in that RFC 5114, and they work just fine with Apache and Nginx. So I guess moving on to SSH, these are basically the four schemes that'll be using 56A, although there's, as with all of these, there's kind of a lot of caveats that you need to be using specific groups or specific curves in order to be compliant. So an easy way to do a scan for SSH is just to run it in like super verbose mode, and then you can see in the debugging output which schemes that are which key exchange protocols that your implementation supports. And then, as the caveat, for Diffie-Hellman, you have to make sure you're following the 56A compliant, which would be the 224 or 256 bit Q values. So this is just kind of a warning that you can't use SSH keygen as it stands now, because that produces safe primes. And but I have, once again, I tested with the groups from RFC 5114, and OpenSSH will accept those with no issues. So if you want to be compliant with revision 2 as it stands now, you could just use the ones from that RFC, or generate your own using, I guess, the methods as defined in FIPS 186-4. And then, I guess, quickly moving on to Ike, kind of as I was, this one's kind of the one that's the most affected, is that, you know, RFC 2409, RFC 3526, they define quite a few groups that are common in the industry, like groups 1, 2, 5, 14, 15, that are all, those as per 56A revision 2 are not allowed, but with revision 3 coming out, that's also one of the things that NIST said they would be addressing. So that's no longer really an issue, but you could basically, with revision 2, all you could use would be RFC 5114, which was groups 22, 23, 24, and basically the NIST curves. And I couldn't really find a quick way to enumerate supported schemes for IPsec and Ike, so I think the best way is just to kind of, you know, go to Google and type it in. And I looked up a couple of common ones for Microsoft. They support Diffie-Hellman's group 1, 2, and 14, which actually none of those were compliant with 56A revision 2. And then StrongSwan actually supports quite a bit, including the ones from RFC 5114. So you could make StrongSwan to be compliant. And I guess this is actually with NIST announcing revision 3 kind of addressing most of the issues that I went over here, this is actually probably the primary thing that would be a gotcha, would be if you have one of the legacy Diffie-Hellman or EC Diffie-Hellman implementations with revision 3, you basically, like, if it's a common group used in Ike or TLS or SSH, you'll be fine, except I would imagine most implementations don't implement self-tests. So if you're looking to make your TLS, SSH, Ike implementation compliant by the end of this year, the most important thing to focus on, if you have one of those legacy Diffie-Hellman or legacy EC Diffie-Hellman implementations, would be to make sure you have all the self-tests implemented. The primary ones here being the Z computation cat, which is basically a simulated calculation of a shared secret and making sure that the result is correct. And then there's some conditional self-tests for assurances, which is, you know, basically that for Diffie-Hellman that you're using PQG to generate your group parameters, or you're using a NIST-defined or RFC-defined set of parameters, verifying the correctness of keys, which would be through a pairwise consistency test or by using PKV. And you also have to make sure that keys can't be associated with multiple sets of domain parameters. And I guess, yeah, that would be opening it up for questions.
Any questions?
Sure, there'll be a lot.
All right, a lot of information here. I think it was great. However, I got two choices, it sounds like. I can try to be compliant today with 56A R2, mm-hmm. or if I and do all the testing and get my validation certificate, or I can wait until 56R3 comes out, which means that I got to go make a whole lot of bunch of code changes in order to quite possibly implement these safe primes. Is that a correct assumption?
So actually, revision 3 is kind of a superset of revision 2. So revision 3 is allowing for more flexibility. So if you make changes to your product to be compliant with revision 2, when revision 3 comes out, revision 3 is like basically on top of everything that's outlined in revision 2, they're adding things like the safe primes and the other commonly used groups.
Okay, so another question. So once January 1st, 2018 comes into play, or comes up, what do I have to test at a minimum to be compliant with 56A or key agreement standards?
What do you test at a minimum?
So do I have to test just to have to do primitive generation, or do I have to be compliant with the full 56A as it currently is defined in 56AR2?
You would have to have, well, actually, I think NIST said they're not, like, if you did, like, on the one of the very early slides, I kind of had, like, you can kind of have allowed Diffie-Hellman and allowed EC Diffie-Hellman, like, which that actually doesn't require really any testing
right
on your behalf. And I don't believe those implementations are going to just get, like, moved to a historical list or anything like that. But yeah, to be compliant, like, post 2018,
right,
you would need to either get it certified through the CAVP, which is actually you can only do with revision 1, which is
So this is my point. So at a minimum, what do I need to do? I mean, do I just implement my safe primes, put in my power on self test for my primitive Z test, and then I'm done until NIST comes out with new testing for 56AR3?
I believe that would be the best approach for it, be implementing your self-tests and then making sure you meet the vendor affirmation requirements when they come. Like for revision 2, they have IGD.1 revision 2, which you can, it's basically just documentation things.
Right.
But yeah, that would be the path forward, I would
think. So probably the likelihood is if I'm hurrying to try to finish a certification to not adhere by that timeline, I just want to do them. I could probably get by without actually doing any CAVP testing for 56A. Is that what you're saying then? Quite possibly.
Correct. But that being caveat with, like, there is some CAVP testing involved. For example, if you're doing TLS, you have to test the
TLS KDS. Absolutely. I get that. Right. But other than that, we wouldn't necessarily get a 56A, because a component validation test for 56A? Is that the way it's...
That's one. You can do that. Like you can test 56A without the KDF, and you could get that
right.
That half of it, and then test the KDF, and that basically covers the whole scheme. But yeah, I don't think you need a 56A cert if you're doing the vendor affirmation route.
Okay, and so I guess that's what I'm getting at, is that I guess we can't get by without doing any primitives testing for Diffie-Hellman or EC Diffie-Hellman other than implementing your safe primes and a power on self test, and I would be good for a while after in 2018, 2019 until CMVP comes out with CAVP testing for 56A. Is that a correct assumption?
That sounds correct. If anyone from NIST is here that wants to correct me, but on top of the power on self test, I did note that you would also need your, like, the pairwise consistency test for key generation.
Absolutely. Yeah, I get that too. All right. Thanks.
I think you'd still also have to do the Q-ordered subgroup check for the generator and P values and Q values. So that's one other check you'd have to do. With regards to your statement that RFC 5114 primes were usable with OpenSSH, I think that would actually fail due to that particular check I just mentioned, where I have to do G to the X mod P to come up with a Q-ordered subgroup.
And yeah, well, see, I thought that's what would be the case.
Because they don't pass Q along that particular part of the protocol.
Okay.
So if I'm using only a moduli file, the only thing I'm passing is G and P. Q is not being sent. So I can't do the, and because Q is only a 256-bit value, it's going to make it so that you can't actually do a correct Q-ordered subgroup validation.
Okay, so you're saying
basically RFC 4419, the group exchange SHA-1 and group exchange SHA-2 are dead on arrival on January 1st.
Okay. Yeah. Because I had manually input. Oh, we're out of time.
You can, but I'm just saying that if you're doing a proper check, you wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.